Blog Red Talk Radio. Yep.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we attitude, we moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Fans, this is the Ropa-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Tuesday afternoon. My schedule's a little mixed up, so we're just going to do recap for this show. Then, on either tomorrow, Wednesday, or Thursday, we'll do the Spence Garcia and talk about a variety of, other stuff as well. I think we'll have a little bit more info with the Deontay Wilder DAZN skipper meeting. Okay, so we'll talk a little bit about that. But anyway, hope everybody had a good weekend. I know I did. Pretty eventful as far as the weather here in Minnesota, but go figure, right? Go figure. It definitely snowed, it rained, it did everything. It froze, but it wasn't as bad as they said, so that's good. Anyway, like I said, this is going to be a shortened show. Really short show. One of the shortest shows I've done. I'm going to stop saying short in a row. Porter Ugas, round by round recap. Was it a close fight or was it a blatant robbery? You know, some people online are saying it was horrible. You know, Ugas won 9 or 10 rounds. Some think that, you know, neither guy doing a whole lot, which, you know, I tend to fall somewhere in there as well. There's kind of a variety of ways to look at this one, no doubt about it. So we're definitely going to talk about that. We'll talk about the other cards or the other fights on the card as well, on the Fox card. And we'll talk about Bivol and Smith and some other stuff on the DAZN card as well. Like I said, we are not going to talk Spence Garcia. That'll be on the next episode, okay? I just don't have time to do a full episode tonight or today. Anyway, if I got a couple of people texting me. Oh, okay. I thought they couldn't hear me. Okay. So, yeah, I see a variety of people coming into the chat here. Or not necessarily the chat, but you know what I mean. All right, we're good to go. Most of these are okay. All right, sorry about that. Just had to make sure that this thing was properly broadcasting and it would archive, because I do not have time to mess about, I guess you could say, today. But anyway, we'll talk a little bit about Golovkin finally signing that deal with DAZN. We'll fill you in with the variety of other, fight news, some of it major, some of it just so-so. But yeah, like I said, there isn't going to be people calling in as far as talking, and mostly it's just going to be me talking. Oh, shoot. Huh. Okay. Okay, so we're all good. I see what they're saying, because I didn't have something open for them to be able to. Okay, so I'm just talking to the people that are texting me trying to get in right now, not to the overall audience. I appreciate that. Appreciate that for letting me know, but I also am sorry for everybody listening at home right now or on the road or wherever you're at. Anyway, if this is your first time listening to the Rope It Up Radio podcast, it streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Rope It Up Radio. So it streams live, it archives. It's basically, the headquarters for Rope It Up Radio, right? We got boxing mainly. We do have some football and basketball shows as well, if you're interested. You can subscribe to Rope It Dope Radio all over the place. iTunes, Player FM. We get a lot of listens. A lot of people like the setup there. Spreaker, Stitcher, TuneIn is another one as well. I'm also overall and part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network that can be found everywhere, including streaming on Spotify, and it can be found on iHeartRadio. Head on over to gruelingtruth.net. It's football, it's boxing, it's basketball, it's baseball, it's everything in between. Head on over to gruelingtruth.net. That's the gruelingtruth.net. You can listen to a podcast. You can read articles from the past and talk about present stuff as well. And while you're at it, place a bet. It'll link you right to mybookie.ag. And just real quick, if you're thinking about cutting the cord, DirecTV Now. Try a 7-day trial. If you look at the packages, they start from $45, $55, $65, $75. There's a Spanish package as well. They do have the cloud DVR. And if you're an AT&T customer, those prices I mentioned, you can lock those in for 2 years. But just straight up DirecTV Now, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or you have, you should check it out. Okay, I tried YouTube. I cut the cord back in August. I tried YouTube Cable, Hulu Plus, Sling, and I found DirecTV Now is the best one of those. So DirecTV Now, you can do a 7-day free trial. Or, like I said, if you are an AT&T customer, you can lock in those prices, the $45, $55, $65, $75 prices that I told you about. So anyway, with this fight, it was interesting. Let's put it that way. I mean, once again, here we are, and these Fox fights, whether it's FS1 or straight up Fox, have turned out really, really well. I think people are kind of they'd rather talk about how Ugas should have won rather than which that's right. That's legit. I don't have a problem for those people who thought he won. I didn't think he won by 10 or 9 rounds. That's me personally. But I also understand if people thought he won. That's no big deal. But it is funny, the shit they got from the fans and large part. Of the media when they had that rollout. And here we are. If you look at it, every one of them basically has turned out main event-wise. Even Jose Cito Lopez, which was a fine opponent to come back from almost 2 years, that was a good fight. So it's just funny how that works. But a lot of people are going to, talk about just Ugas or – they're going to talk negatively about what would be the A side in this one, the house fighter Porter, right? They're not going to talk about, hey, we got a good competitive fight, and it looks like it peaked well over 2 million. We don't have the final stats as far as peak right now. But anyway, this was a tight fight. And although I thought Porter was smart in his methods against Danny Garcia, where he actually flipped the script and boxed for the first chunk of it and slowly but surely started darting in, getting his combinations off, and then darting out and kind of resetting or having Garcia come to him and counter him. And then he got into mid to late. Then he got into really getting into the chest and fighting like he normally does. And I kind of thought he'd do that exact thing. I thought at some point Porter would have to close the gap because Ugas is just bigger. He's a big 147 pounder, dude. And it's not like Porter's a small, 147, but you see them in the ring. It was like, whoa. But I really thought that he'd start with that and then blend it in and attack a lot more than he did. Everybody hates his crude style. He can't please anybody, Porter. He really can't. People love him on the outside of the ring, right? The hardworking, this, that, and the other. He did, surprisingly, almost 2 pounds, basically 2 pounds over. He did, lose that. We actually had two guys over because wasn't Hooker 5 pounds over. That was a big surprise, but Ugas on the other side. So Porter, could have just done more in general instead of fainting so much. It's cool to set up stuff with the faint. I'm all for it. But, you know, he was getting to the point where it's like, dude, okay, you've set up the faint. You got to throw more punches that land now. But then on the flip side, same with Ugas. You know, it did mess with him, Ugas, that Porter wasn't coming to him, and that's what he wanted. And he was sitting there smiling and kind of making fun of Porter while he did all these feints. And he was smiling with this bloody lip, and he's just not doing much for a while, not the whole fight, but for a while. And you're like, dude, I get it. You know, you're going to smile, you're going to make fun of him, but you have to also do something too. And nobody, you know, people don't like the fact that you got to take it from a champ. I don't like it either. That shouldn't, there's nowhere, it's not stated anywhere in the rule books. But, you know, if one guy's on the outside not doing much, but you're not actually doing much either, then it gets tough. And a lot of these rounds were close, where someone just inched it off. But let's take it round by round real quick here. You know, the first round I gave to Ugas, I thought he landed the better shot, a couple of short shots. Not much happened, though. There was a late counter by Porter, because that's one thing that Porter was doing well when Ugas, and to kind of speak of what Ugas was doing well, you know, in the same breath, he was going to the body. Maybe not throughout the fight effectively, but when he went there, it was very effective. You know, he just didn't go enough to the body. Maybe that's what I meant to say. But sometimes when Ugas would go to the body, he would get countered upstairs. And that's about the only thing that happened. But I gave Ugas the first. The second I gave to Porter, he landed a few flush counter right hands. But overall, it was slow. It was really slow. Third round, that's a swing round, dude. I mean, for me, I even wrote down, you can't worry about Porter. This is from Ugas' side. You can't worry about Porter and him not bum rushing you. You can't worry that he's doing that. You still got to throw your jab. You still got to be a little bit more active as the come forward fighter, or at least come forward. So that could have been either guy's round. It could have been a 10-10, and the way we used to score him, 9-9 when nothing happens. But there was some things that happened. Don't get me wrong. But not just, it was a tough one. I gave Ugas the fourth. It was another slow round. Took this fight a long time to get going. Considering the first round actually was a very fun round to watch. I thought, wow, this is going to pick up a lot quicker than I thought. And then the next 3 to 4 rounds, it seemed to slow way down. So I gave Ugas the fourth. So there I am after four, about 2-2, but maybe 3-1-1 or 2-1-1, sorry. I gave the fifth round to Porter and the sixth round to Porter. You had Ugas countering with the right, but I thought, especially in the fifth round and in the sixth, that Porter finally got a little bit more aggressive. There was some good exchanges as well. Good back and forth in the fifth and sixth. I just thought the bigger shot was landed by Porter in those two rounds. Very fun round, though. So, you know, I could have it about 3-3. 4-2 for either guy. Three-two-one for either guy at that point, to be honest with you. Like I said, there is a swing round in there. I'm sure people are debating back and forth on rounds when it comes to this. Then I gave Ugas the seventh, though. It's kind of a mixed bag of exchanges and chunks of slowness, you know, by both guys. And in that round, in many of these rounds, Porter was just doing too much. He was just moving too much. Wasn't doing enough is what I meant to say. I'm here trying to rush this because I don't have much time. I got to slow down. But not like this fight, though. We wanted to speed up. But, yeah, he just didn't do enough in that round. It's not like Ugas did a bunch, but, you know, he landed enough shots, especially with the right hand, that did it, especially to the body. The eighth round, another swing round. It could have went either way. You know, I'm okay with saying that. A lot of people have to decide on a round. I don't see why if neither guy did a whole lot or if it's just a competitive round. I guess, you know, I favor Ugas in that, though, the counter rights over Porter's jab. they were at least, you know, picking up the pace somewhat. It was a close round. I really don't know if that was Ugas's round or a draw or whatever. I did get bored of the ninth and tenth. He started finally kind of going in and out, where he'd dart in, land his punches, and then reset, box, and then do the same with the jab in the right hand, the up jab especially. The 10th round, he landed probably two or three really clean right hands. And Porter was also cut by a punch in that one, too. And then I gave Ugas the 11th and 12th. And from my understanding, the late rounds, I really think the 11th and 12th are clearly Ugas's round. And based off the scorecards, this is where the scorecards got funky. I really don't think, you know, Porter in the 11th was just moving away too much, not doing anything. Or not enough, anyway. There was some decent stuff late, but, and that's also the round where Ugas threw Porter down, but he countered with his right. To me, I'll say this, maybe the 11th round, that late left hand that kind of wobbled Ugas, we could say it wobbled him. We could also say it was maybe just off balance and it wasn't as bad as it seemed. So maybe that's why people gave him the 11th, which I guess if you look at the most powerful shot just visually, even if it was off balance or not, you know, I guess I could see that. But the 12th round, you know, that was a Ugas round. And the ref didn't call a knockdown. He called it a slip. There was some water on the edge there. Could have been a little, you know, off balance slash, you know, slip. We've seen that be called a knockdown plenty. Now we've seen refs, you know, miss knockdowns too. Obviously, this was a crucial one. This is a really crucial one because, you know, you're taking away a 10-8 round there. But overall, I thought he, you know, I mean, Porter was on his toes, but the overhand rights, and he was just beating him to the punch. Ugas won that round regardless. Now, as far as the knockdown, if people say that's 100% a knockdown, you know, I'll argue a little bit because it did kind of look like his back leg did slip, but it happened at the same time as the punch. But I will say this. It's kind of like a side clothesline that contributed to the knockdown, too. Now, we've seen, you know, back of the head or, I mean, back of the head shots called knockdowns. We've seen knockdowns that weren't knockdowns be called knockdowns. So I'm kind of in between on this one, just like I am on the decision, because like I said, if you slow that thing down and just look at it just straight up. If you slow it down, Ugas came with like a, in a sense, like a closed, kind of like a push in the back of the head punch, like all the way in the back of the head, almost back of the neck. And so it did kind of look clothesline-ish and literally not on the side of the head or the ear or the, you know what I mean? So I don't know. Obviously it stands way out in a tight fight though. You know what I mean? If you look at it, I had it 6-6. I was fine with 6-5-1 or 7-5 for Ugas, 6-5-1, 7-5 for Porter, whatever. Like I said, 7-5 or 6-6 for either guy, I was actually okay with. Neither guy, both kind of left something in the ring. Neither guy quite really went for it. But for those who say it was 10-2, I just didn't see that at all. Like, I understand that Porter didn't do enough, and there was times where he was just on the outside way too much. I don't think he'll ever fight like that. And like I said, Porter can't please anybody because when he does rush forward, people hate it. And then he shows he can box more and people hated it. But I can understand because he just wasn't doing enough boxing. You know what I mean? Like, you need to win the rounds cleanly when you're on the outside. But that said, if you're the come forward fighter, you know, Ugas threw less punches and land less punches. So, and then the whole copy box thing, you know, it's kind of a narrative. It fits, you know, sometimes you use copy box, sometimes you don't. Some people say, well, they weren't doing the stats right. And it is what it is. It is what it is. But anyway, Porter landed 144 to 128, which is not a big gap at all. Usually when you're on the outside boxing, you need to land 20, 30, 40 more punches. Probably 30, 40, 50 sometimes, right? But then again, if you're the come forward fighter, a lot of times you got to outwork the guy too. And that's where Ugas failed. We can't just say Porter stayed in his outside lane way too much, which he did. You also have to put some of the blame on Ugas, because when you're the come forward fighter and you throw like 75 punches less and you land less, that doesn't necessarily line up either. You know, he needed to press more because when Porter was just fainting. So I don't agree with 117-111. I don't agree with 8 rounds for Porter either. One, like I said, the 7-5, okay, but see, that's the difference. You know, had you given Ugas another round, and then, you know, that would have been – I would have liked to have seen the other two scorecards closer. That's what I would have liked to see. But I'm okay with the draw. I do kind of favor Ugas, you know, by a round. But the Porter, yeah, I'm right in between. I literally had it 6-6. But, you know, that knockdown would have been enough. And like I said, I'm okay with 7-5 or 6-5-1. It is what it is. I know people don't like draw rounds. Too bad. You know, I always say people tell you to go back and watch all these black and white fights, right? Not black against white, but in black and white TV, older fights. But you know what? And I understand why they do that. I do. I've watched plenty of black and whites. But one thing that is clear is they sometimes you see 3 or 4 even rounds. You know what I mean? I know you got to make your mind up unless not a damn thing's happening. You know, why should I give a round where neither guy did enough? That's the way I look at it. But anyway, all in all, Ugas definitely made himself that much more known and is, you know, he's still going to be right there. This is not a bad loss whatsoever for him because a lot of people thought he won. And he knows what he can do now a little bit more, too. Porter has to get back to more of what he did against Danny Garcia if he's going to blend this boxing style, which I think is smart, but you have to dart in and actually commit to an attack, and that's something he did. But anyway, all in all, I think it is kind of funny now all of a sudden Porter and his team are looking for Spence. When they weren't looking for Spence, they were really not talking about Spence for 2019. They were talking about Thurman. But, you know, it was a cold night at the former StubHub, and what, there was about 1,000 people there, something like that. That was a really bad night, and it doesn't bode well for Porter moving forward. It would have been nice. I don't know what was available in L.A. or Vegas, but it would have been nice to have it at a much smaller venue. Oh, you know, it's not necessarily the venue size. It just, this was outdoors, and it was chilly. You could see the California crowd was not having it, but it doesn't bode well for Porter. As far as saying, hey, I want to be in a pay-per-view fight and with Spence next, if he gets by Garcia, obviously. Anyway, let's keep it moving. F.A., Ajogba, you know, I really wish Mansoor would have given him 2 or 3 more rounds. The guy needs rounds. And this was their attempt to get rounds. It just seems like when he connects with the right hand especially, basically the dude's going to get affected majorly. Right away, he came out with the jabs, landed a few right hand. He landed a really nice right hand on the chin, right on the chin, turned it over and everything nicely, you know, to cause the knockdown. And even the shot before it, you could see it was kind of affected him. Some late exchanges, though. And this is when I saw in the second round, Mansoor, don't get me wrong, he got hit and hurt and all that, but he started freaking landing some overhand rights back. And I thought, okay, this is what it is. And I think it was the left hand, actually, that he was landing some overhands. I was like, okay, cool. Same with, I think there was a right hand, too, late. But it really didn't matter. You know, there was like a push, fall, trip thing, and I'm pretty sure Mansoor kind of banged up his knee or his leg somewhere in there because he was kind of limping on it. But the right hand, the uppercuts, it started getting pretty bad. And in the third round, you know, he just didn't answer the bell. It was, you know, like I said, I liked what I saw out of Mansoor when he started landing back. Then I thought, okay, dude, this is going to be a good fight for a couple more rounds. But Mansoor just doesn't have enough in the tank to last that long against a power puncher like this, I guess, you know what I mean? Or the chin, whatever. But either way, FA got put in front of him in his, what, ninth fight or eighth fight, something like that. He did the job, and the right hand, when he turns it, I mean, he gets hit plenty. He doesn't have a long amateur experience, but I was okay with where the level he's at right now. I was actually okay with this fight, but, you know, he got rid of him, and that's all that counts. We'll see where they go from here. I wouldn't think that it'd be, you know, that many more fights before they step him up to a contender level. I do think he needs rounds. I think he's gone, what, seven rounds once or something like that? I can't remember. But anyway, he got the job done, F.A. did. Now, the Abel Ramos-Francisco Santana fight, the co-feature, we thought this would be a good fight, and it was. It actually really was. It was very tight, kind of back and forth. I kind of split between the four rounds. I had it about 2-2. There was a 10-8 round from Santana, which you might say 10-9-9 or 10-9, you know, because, you know, you the must system for the 10-point must system. Because I actually thought that Ramirez, you know, with his uppercut and the left hook, especially some counter left hooks, I thought he was actually winning the round. But hey, you know, that left hook in an exchange was nice by Santana. The third round, I gave it to Ramos, but that was a close round. I gave Santana the fourth and fifth, both of them competitive rounds, but it seemed like he was his left hook and his right crosses were landed really well. But then Ramos, for me, you know, Santana was on him, but Ramos started landing the body and those uppercuts. Those uppercuts froze, you know, Santana a couple times in that seventh round. And for me, then Ramos basically went on a run, the 8th, 9th, and 10th. He landed the crisper shot. It seemed like Santana was getting arm punchy, and the ones that he got off with some speed and looked like they had something behind them, they missed. You know, so he faded, where Ramos, he kind of blended brawling and moving on the outside, countering, especially with that uppercut. But these guys were active as hell. It was a really good fight. I had it 6-4. I could see 6-3-1 as well for Ramos. I didn't agree with 98-92, but 95-94 and 96-92 I was good with. Ramos landed 268 to 221, so over 10 rounds. That's a lot of lands for both guys. A combined 1,700. So that's pretty damn good. Now, 1,700 thrown. So for 10 rounds, that's damn good. Good action fight. We thought it would be. The last Fox card that they had, who was it, Figueroa and Molina, that was a good co-feature to kind of get the casuals, you know, to stay tuned. Like, oh, okay, these guys are really going at it, and that's what I thought this was. Good mid-level fight. I want to see more of Ramos, no doubt. Not to say Francisco Santana needs to retire. It just Ramos... Jamal James, that was a tight ass fight, so we'll see where he goes. Santana, his best work was to the body. He landed 87 to 32 there, but like I said, he faded. So that was about it overall, though. A good card, you know. The first, like I said, I really wish we'd get like two or three more rounds of what we were getting with Mansoor landing back as well, but that wasn't going to happen. F.A. got him out of there. But the Porter Ugas, it disappointed action-wise for reasons we didn't think would be the reason, right? Like I said, a lot of people are disgusted and hate how Porter fights. And this didn't do him any favors because he decided to box pretty much the whole fight, you know, on the outside, and it was just too many feints. So he didn't do himself, you know, any good there. Porter's still going to have the, yeah, nice guy, man. nice guy, but they don't like the way he fights, and this one didn't help him. Now, Ugas' stock goes up, and on the hardcore level, 8 in a row, a lot of them against unbeaten prospects or solid dudes, some of them just okay. He's been taking care of business, so Ugas isn't going anywhere, I don't think. But Porter, we'll see if it's Thurman and him or what, you know, what happens this summer with them. Now, the whole card, we don't have the final stats just yet as far as peak numbers. I should double check just to make sure, though. The peak or the whole card averaged 1.6, so that's up from 1.3, excuse me, from the Leo card. And we don't know the actual peak, like I said, for the main event. The overnight average was kind of misleading because it didn't have the main event involved in it. So the first thing we see is 1.62 overall. If you include Deportes, it's 1.73. That's for the whole card. So there's a good chance that the main event averaged 1.8, 1.9, maybe even probably over 2 million. It's just a matter of how high it peaked over 2 million. So it's definitely an improvement. It was a kind of a, if you look at the ratings and the demo, it was a pretty mediocre night for network TV in general. That's the way it's been described by people who follow it for a living. But that night on Saturday, you know, it had the NBA, it had Golden State, so you got the West Coast and Coast. So that's a big, you know, demographic to mess with. And like I said, they were not as high as they normally are too. But and also, in college basketball and ESPN, you had back-to-back major. Basically, the Big Ten and the ACC are the most popular and the best conferences. And right now, they had Michigan and Michigan State to decide who would win the Big Ten. And you had North Carolina Duke, which across all sports is one of the best, if not the best, rivalry. So there was a ton of competition. So, you know, if the main event averaged anywhere near 2 million and peaked at 2.2 or 2.4, that would be an improvement, and that would be closer to what the Charlo brothers in December peaked at. But anyway, let's move on. We did have the DAZN. I'll talk about two fights from the DAZN card. Obviously, Dimitri Bivol took care of business against Joe Smith Jr. On paper, I didn't mind this fight because, you know, Joe Smith Jr. is a solid dude. He definitely punches hard. He could take a good punch, but you wondered where his mind state was. Was it a fat check that he said, screw it, let's just jump back in there with the elite? Or could he have been built back a fighter? I don't know. I really don't know. What I do know is, you know, Bivol did a good job with his jab. He was controlling distance like he usually does. He controls the action most part. You did have, you know, Joe Smith Jr. pushing forward. A lot of misses, though. He missed a lot of punches, and that's why I don't know if he was 100% ready for this fight. Not that he missed a bunch, but if you look at the punch total at the end, it's pretty damn scary. The fourth round, though, he did actually, I noted that, he did land some decent shots. The fifth through seventh, though, it was hard combinations, you know, that followed the jab, basically, that was setting up everything for Bivol. Smith Jr. picked it up, though. You know, he landed a late right hand, right, I think a little after the bell or right after the bell, somewhere in that realm, that actually seemed to buzz Bivol. You know, he affected him a little bit. He just couldn't capitalize on it. I think that was the 10th or something like that. He also slammed Bivol as well. He had two slams. Well, actually, that one was a full-on slam. That was like a Greco-Roman slam. But the 118, 110, and two cards had it 119, 111. 208 to 39, dude. I mean, have you ever seen that over a 12-round fight? 39 punches landed? He threw 344. He landed 10% or 395, whatever it was. 208 out of 714, 29%. So that's landed at a good rate. Bivol looked like he normally does. He looked pretty damn good, I have to admit. He's not the punching power killer that a lot of people thought he was on the way up. But he is, in a sense, still a killer. Just with his technique. It does get... I don't know. I want to see him against a guy that can really do some damage on the outside. But there's not a ton of them out there. You know, as far as being in the middle of the ring and pushing forward, you know, a lot of people kind of downgrade Kovalev now, and I understand some of that. He had a good performance against Alvarez now. You know, nice bounce back where a lot of people thought, including myself, hey, man, if he loses this, this could be the end of the road for him mentally even, especially if he got knocked out, Kovalev. But Kovalev could be a guy that could beat Bivol, even at the older age, some of the mental thing where you think, man, I don't know if he's really all for it. I think that would be a tough matchup, but it'll be interesting to see what Bivol gets. You know, are they going to kind of have some fights happen, you know, on ESPN and other places, PBC to an extent anyway, but not many fights over there. We hear Marcus Brown might be signing with ESPN or DAZN. I would say DAZN, that would be a good fight too, Brown and him. But it'd be a great fight. But as far as that, you got to figure that, I don't know. You got to figure Bivol is going to be kind of stuck over there like Crawford. Making good-ass money, but will he get the major fights? That's what we're going to find out. I don't know how long the Bivol contract is, though. Is it a three-fight deal? Maybe he'll be a little bit loose, you know, quicker than we think anyway. The one I'll talk about, the one fight, Kellyam Johnson and Shawnee Monahe. Johnson was just pushing forward with his jab. He bloodied up, you know, Shawnee really quick. I think it was a knockdown in the second round. The second one was, you know, I think two flush right hands to the head. Monahe just looked in really bad shape, unfortunately, when you're watching it. Third round TKO, there wasn't much to that. Kellyam Johnson just basically keeps building, you know, his way kind of back up, I guess you could say, or up. Not back up, but up. So, well, he did lose, so I guess it would be back up. But still, because, you know, he did knock down Beterbiev and then got, you know, dispatched. But a good performance from him. Monahe, you know, was the reason why a lot of people came out there, you know. But it is what it is. I'm not sure how many more fights at this level, or hopefully not higher than this level, that he has. But we'll see. That about wraps it up. From the weekend, Hooker did win as well. He was 5 pounds over, but he managed to win. Variety of other fighters were able to win as well. Nothing too in-depth to really talk about too much as far as prospects and stuff. I don't do a lot of prospect talking until they start to fight someone we've actually seen at a higher level or a contender level or at least fringe contender level. but there is a variety on DAZN and ESPN or on Fox. As far as this weekend, like I said, either tomorrow or the next day, we're going to really focus in on Spence and Garcia and some other fight news that lingers out there. The news that we're going to talk about just for a short moment here is a couple of things. Now, you know, Gennady Golovkin made it 100% official. He is with DAZN, 6-fight deal. He's going to fight someone here in June. And then hopefully in September we get Canelo and Golovkin 3. The way John Skipper talked about it, he said, you know, he doesn't really want to talk about fights in the future 100% today. We didn't get an opponent, which was a little strange. I was kind of surprised at that, but I guess he's just thinking, hey, let's let Canelo and Jacobs actually fight, and let's let Golovkin win, then we'll talk about it. But he said that's the fight everybody wants, so hopefully they deliver that in September, if in fact Canelo and Golovkin get by, but that's official now. Speaking of DAZN, sounds like this week Deontay Wilder and his representatives are going to meet with DAZN, John Skipper. They're not meeting with Eddie Hearn per se. John Skipper will at least be in the meetings, if not the main person in the meetings, if not the only person. That we don't know that specific right now. All we know is John Skipper, the head of DAZN there, is going to have a meeting with Wilder. And obviously, you know, the detail that we know coming from a variety of sources is his second fight would guarantee be against Joshua in November and December, which is a little different than what ESPN was saying and what they were talking about contract-wise, which that one was a little bit more vague. Not that that couldn't have happened with the rematch in the fall, but it sounds like that's the whole point, and I'm pretty sure Wilder and Wilder's side would want that to know exactly what was up with that fight before they signed anything, which rightfully so. So that would be big. That would be big for DAZN. That would suck for Showtime and ESPN, obviously, you know, probably momentarily, short term for Showtime, whereas, you know, ESPN just, you know, invested in Fury. And if they couldn't get, you know, Joshua, or if they couldn't get the Fury, or, you know, the Wilder Fury matchup, that would hurt them. That would hurt them. And so sucks for Showtime and HBO, or I mean, in ESPN. But really good for DAZN and really good for Wilder. And if they could get that Wilder-Joshua fight later this year, that would be great for fans. That would be phenomenal. So let's see how that goes. So, yeah, there are some other news items that out there that we'll get to in a little bit. Well, not a little bit, on the next show. but not too much. I did mention that it sounded like the Charlo Harrison rematch was going to be on the undercard of Herd J-Rock. It sounds like they're going to put Gary Russell together. That makes sense on that side of the country, too. So Herd J-Rock would be with Gary Russell Jr. on the undercard. And now it sounds like the Charlos will be back in June. So Jermall will be in his hometown, Houston, and then on a separate card, Charlo and Harrison. So we'll see if it's going to be Fox or FS1 or Showtime. But that's just a little bit of update. I know I talked about that last week. That was the strong rumors that they were going to put Charlo and Harrison on the undercard. It sounds like they're going to separate the twins too, which makes sense unless it's complete stay-busy fights for both of them. It didn't seem like that works, and that Harrison fight will be an important-ass fight for Charlo, obviously. So to have that emotion, I thought Goosen did a good job during that broadcast of explaining when he had the Marquez brothers, I think he spoke of. I forgot who it was. Why is it? But anyway, I did think, you know, him saying the emotion, the energy you waste watching your brother in an important fight kind of lines up, and it does make sense. But anyway, that's about it for this show. We are going to, you know, like I said, break down Spence and Garcia either tomorrow or the next day. Maybe we'll have a little bit more information on that DAZN and Wilder stuff. But anyway, I'm going to get out of here. I got to go to work. I got to work late tonight. That was the whole point of doing it during the day. I apologize for those who wanted to call in and talk about Porter Ugas. I appreciate everybody that called in today. But anyway, I will be back, and you can call in or listen in, you know, to talk, because there are going to be people calling the next show for Porter Ugas recap anyway to give their thoughts on it. I was okay with 6-6 or 7-5 for either guy. I, if I had to lean, I'd probably lean Ugas, but I don't think it was a 10-2 fight, though. Or even, I don't see 9 wins or 9 rounds for Ugas, and I definitely don't see 8 or even 7 maybe for Porter. So, had some funky scorecards. Only one of them was even near, I thought, what the score should have been. But, like I said, a lot of times the underdog gets more credit here because, you know, a lot of people weren't talking about this fight. There's podcasts that didn't even really do a preview for this fight. They just brushed it off as another PBC mismatch. But then when we get a good fight, it goes right to, like, complain about Ugas, complain about Porter, complain about the knockdown, but also admit that it was a much better competitive fight than you thought. Even if it was a slow fight and not as good as I thought action-wise it would be, it's still a competitive fight out there, guys. And it was an upset. If you had Ugas winning 9-3, that's a big upset. So there's also, you know, be critical, but also admit you were wrong. You know what I mean? If you didn't even preview the thing, but then you come back and all you're going to do is bitch, as a boxing fan, aren't you happy you got a more competitive than, you know, fight than you thought? In fact, you didn't even think it was worth previewing and talking about or watching, but then Ugas pulls the upset. It's like, I don't know, be happy that you think he did too. Now, he got robbed. Okay, I don't think it was a robbery. I don't call close fights robbery, but I did think, you know, if I had to lean, I'd lean Ugas for sure. And I understand the people that thought he won, but it seems like you give the underdog the closer rounds when the underdog's doing a lot better than people thought. And so that's a problem too. Just like the house fighter getting the close rounds or a come forward fighter throwing punches but not landing. Well, that's not right either, right? You know, and just like Porter, dude, how many times are you going to faint? I think the faint is set up. Throw some punches. Dart in there. Close the gap. This dude's got some length on you. He's got some height on you, too. So anyway, I'm going to get out of here. We'll be back either tomorrow, more than likely tomorrow night, maybe Thursday night, one of the two. But I'm going to try to pull it off tomorrow. Anyway, enjoy the rest of the week, and I'll check back in with you here very soon. Peace.
And I believe that you feel you have the upper hand. So now, when you fight, let's say you fight 4 or 5 years of straight survival.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.